Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Well, Mike, you know, a pretty good main event from a match perspective, I thought. Action-packed. I thought Roman Reigns and Xavier Woods got the audience, you know, invested. And they certainly tried to tell a story where Woods was, you know, living up to his potential, and that the upset was there for the taking. He puts up a good fight, but then the Usos come out and they cause a DQ. They destroy Xavier Woods, and Reigns ends the show with Woods' crown on his head. So I ask you, did that pretty much go how you thought it would go, or how it should have gone? Are they one and the same? I think there's a lot of different angles you can look at that segment from, but you know, what did you think?
I think they are one and the same. I think they did everything how it should have unfolded there, even if I would dare say it was a predictable main event and main event outcome. But anything else, and it wouldn't have worked as well. I think it's the big clue is that we didn't see the Usos tonight, you know, in the in the arena outside of highlight packages or whatever. So you figure something is up there. And also with Paul Heyman laying down his proclamation earlier in the episode about these outlandish things that Roman is going to do, like be banished from SmackDown or surrender his championship if he's not the one who yields to Woods at the end of the night. So those things, you know, aren't going to happen. So it's just a matter of how do they ensure that. And we saw it unfold in a way that really made sense. Yeah, I think it worked.
Yeah, I think it worked too. I think it worked too in the end. I mean, sometimes, and I advocate for this a lot on this show and through other things that I write or say on podcasts for the Torch, but like, you know, sometimes the predictable thing is the way to go. You know, it's the most effective way to go and to handle a situation. And that's not always a bad thing, you know, that it's predictable or that it's simple. That can be the most impactful at the same time. And I think that's kind of the situation here. I think where WWE gets themselves in trouble is when, like, this finish would have mattered so much more and would have had even more impact. If you don't see DQ finishes like this all over every show and the 7 hours of or whatever. Yeah, 7 hours now if you count NXT with and all that programming, right? Like, this type of finish would stand out and you could really lean into the fact that, hey, this makes sense. That was logical. I think there's a frustration in a finish like this because you just see it all the time. And so when it does make sense, it's less effective because you've seen it so much. I mean, would you agree with that? Or are you saying, Zach, I still think you're missing the mark?
No, that's absolutely correct. And to tie it back into what you opened with, Woods having hope in this match could be amplified tenfold if they didn't always do screwy finishes.
Yeah, right.
Because
right.
The audience isn't already just mentally prepared for that. Like, they do it so often, you're subconsciously prepared for it. Like, yeah, that's just how the match ends. You know what I mean? And if they didn't have that habit, they could get even more out of the crowd in the arena and at home. Like, are they actually going to do this with Woods? The closer he gets or the longer he stretches Roman before the Usos got involved. So, yeah, they definitely pry away from the show some of the effectiveness of what Woods, you know, holding out. And, again, to go back to predictability, just putting it on paper, no one really expects Woods, everything else being equal, to go over Roman Reigns here.
Yeah,
but you'd hope
right.
for him to just have a good showing. But again, with their habitual screwy finishes, it's less impactful, and as is his kind of going the distance with Reigns has less impact when you just kind of know what's going to happen.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so it dilutes the effectiveness here, even though I agree with you. I think it was the logical way to go and really the only way to go. I think there's an argument to make, and I'll probably make this argument, that, like, hey, you load this matchup so much with those stipulations that you know, even though they're trying to tell the story of, hey, Xavier Woods is hanging in there, the upset's there for the taking, but because Heyman laid it on so thick earlier with those stipulations, you did know. And I think I would have pulled back on that a little bit just to keep the facade more available that, hey, maybe Woods might actually win this thing. But that's nitpicking. What do you make of, like, I think the end game here of this is, A, yes, to get a main event on SmackDown, but Roman Reigns versus Big E is happening at Survivor Series. And this, I think, is a little nugget, a little avenue to connect, you know, Reigns and Big E for their match that's outside the bounds of just, hey, we're champions. I thought there was a chance maybe we'd see, you know, a Big E run in tonight, although that would have been, you know, a little strange because they're on different brands. But, hey, it is Survivor Series season. So I thought this angle was effective at laying a foundation for that match outside of just, hey, we're both champions, we're colliding head on. You know, I thought Charlotte's promo on Becky Lynch earlier in the night was a little sloppy. We'll get to that later, but I thought this served as a kind of, again, a simple way to connect the dots between Big E and Roman Reigns, have Reigns take out his New Day partner in Woods, and you go from there.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to unite them because the New Day is splintered right now. But they even made reference on tonight's show about the New Day. I mean, I think it was Woods in an interview backstage or something mentioned how Big E wasn't doing too well after being like power bombed on the ring apron or whatever by, I think, Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Big E's not in good shape. And now Reigns and company put Woods down. And then to add insult to injury sort of defaces the crown. I mean, that's a whole different thing. I think the crown is stupid, you know, but
that was my next question. Yep.
Setting that aside for the moment, they kind of made a mockery of it and took the crown. And that's something that presumably would get at Big E as well because of the camaraderie with Woods and Kofi. So, yeah, like you said, they're connecting the dots. So it's a good lead up, and it will make, I think, for a really good, you know, WWE is the best in the business at putting together these video packages. So that's definitely going to be edited in to see Reigns and the Usos and what they did to Kofi here tonight. It's gonna be good for that Survivor Series match.
Yeah, I agree. And again, there's just another layer there, another layer of just drama to play off of and intrigue to play off of. Yeah, the crown thing. Let's talk about that, and then we'll get the calls here. I think as it's marinated here for 12 minutes, I think I'm okay with it because, like you said, they just Roman Reigns and the Usos, they put it on them, but it was more of like this disrespectful kind of in your face way. I you know, it wasn't presented or framed as like, wow, now Roman Reigns really is the king and he's going to wear this crown. Like, it was more just disrespect towards Woods than, okay, Reigns is using this prop. I think the crown, like you, I've been against this whole king gimmick. I think it's silly and really overdone now that it's happening on two different brands with two different people, one who's a heel and one who's a babyface. It's really disconnected. So I don't know that there was necessarily heat in, oh my God, he stole the crown. It was more so, wow, he's really, you know, disrespecting Xavier Woods right now. So I'm in the position to defend that move at this point, but
I should clarify something.
Yeah.
I want to clarify, I'm not against what Reigns and the Usos did with the crown at the end of this match. That all,
okay. Oh, gotcha.
That makes
gotcha.
Sense. What I'm against is that the crown exists in the first place and that Woods wears it and acts out a king gimmick. That's what I'm against in the bigger picture. But the way they defaced his crown was totally in line with Reigns and the Usos. So that I'm okay with, since the crown apparently must exist in the first place.
Yes. If the crown, someone has to wear the crown, I guess, Mike. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, good. Yeah. I was, Boy, I was like getting ready to whip out some notes here and try to convince you otherwise. So okay, good. Now we're in a good position. But yeah, I mean, it's a good way to get, you know, a little bit of heat, show a little bit of disrespect. And you know, Reigns, I thought, had a really good facial expression when he had the crown on. He just totally smirks it off and has this just real arrogant jerk look on his face, and it played perfectly. And again, Roman Reigns, man, continues to just, I mean, have a presence on that show. I mean, it's a 2-hour show. He's obviously all over it, typically start to finish. But, you know, without him and not without his segments, I mean, I think that show really, really falls off the cliff. He's a big anchor there. The crowd, you know, they had that camera shot of his music hitting, and then they had a whole crowd shot there, and his music hits and the crowd just gets to their feet instantly. So I mean he continues to, I'm not breaking any news here saying this, but I mean, he continues to impress, and it's him and then everybody else.
He's the biggest star on the show for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so let's pause right there. We're going to get to calls here, and we have a lot of other things to talk about. We can talk about the kind of the angle with Survivor Series tonight on SmackDown, with none of the teams seemingly getting along. We can talk about that. We'll talk about Charlotte's promo. I want to talk a little bit about Sami Zayn at some point, because I thought he had a good night. But we'll pause. We'll set up the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. We're covering the November 12th, 2021 edition of WWE SmackDown. I'm PW Torch, assistant editor Zach Hador, filling in for Wade tonight. He will be around on the VIP side of things with his usual rundown of SmackDown and analysis, amongst a host of other things, on the Wade Keller Hotline a little bit later for VIP members. PWTorch.com/goVIP. If you want to see what that's all about and listen to that, as well as a host of other VIP podcasts covering the whole wide range of pro wrestling stuff and topics and companies that are out there these days. It's the group of people who are putting these podcasts together, they're knowledgeable, smart analysis, and I think you guys will really like it. So check it out, pwtorch.com/goVIP. The other voice you hear with me tonight is Mike Myers from pwtorch.com. Mike, great to talk to you, man. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to be here, Zach. We're holding down the PW Torch fort.
Yes.
For a mundane, particularly Monday night of SmackDown, when we're on the eve of an AEW pay-per-view. So I kind of feel like we're in the shadows a bit of
yes,
some larger goings on. But anyway, yeah, it's good to be here with you again.
It certainly feels that way. Yeah. Like scrolling through, you know, the old Twitter feed during the show, it's like, man, it just felt like less people were watching this show tonight than usual. I know a lot of the Wade, I think he's at Rampage tonight. I think Todd Martin is there with him, a couple other Torch people as well. So yeah, I mean, certainly the wrestling, the bright light of wrestling fans is pointed at AEW right now. But hey, like you said, Mike, we're here holding down the fort. We've got a lot of callers waiting to get into the conversation. And I think it ended up being a pretty newsworthy SmackDown tonight. I think there's a lot of topics and nuggets to get there. So I think, yeah, in the shadows, but we'll be pretty busy. So let's open up phone lines. 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. Go ahead and press 1 to let me know that you want to chat with us. It just flags you on the switchboard here so I can see that you've raised your hand, and then go to you at some point. Hopefully we got a lot of people waiting on, so I'm not sure we'll get to everybody, but we will do our absolute best. If we don't get to you, you can send us an email, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'll open up the mailbag a little bit later tonight in the show, and so you can reach us there for anything that we don't get to here in the caller portion of the show. So with that said, Mike, if you're ready, we'll go ahead and take the first call.
Let's do it.
All right, we'll start today with 443. 443, you are up first. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, it's Kyle from Baltimore. How you doing?
Hey, Kyle, good to talk to you, man. Always looking forward to your contribution to the SmackDown post show here. What'd you think of SmackDown tonight?
Before I start, I'll say today's my birthday, so this was like really good SmackDown, I thought, too. Because usually when SmackDown
wow.
lands on my... when WWE lands on my birthday, never, sometimes isn't really that good. I remember there was a time of an episode of Raw in 2012 that wasn't a good episode and landed on my birthday, and also it happened like twice in 2012 and also 2018. The only time it did happen that was when Becky, it was that angle at Issus Survivor Series, coincidentally with the Becky Lynch angle. That was the best part that was the main event segment. So overall, tonight's SmackDown though was a good SmackDown. I thought it was a good birthday SmackDown for me. So I want to say for me, it's what I just really popped up in my brain throughout the last few weeks is Sonya Deville. It's like I'm thinking to myself, what is her problem with Naomi and now Aaliyah? I don't really understand. There's no, she may be doing good work as a character, but there's no really no story there beyond the fact that, oh, she hates Naomi because, as far as I'm concerned, because she's black. And now she hates Aaliyah because, for some reason, because she's just super new and not, and doesn't care about these new wrestlers. So what is it about Sonya Deville that she has a problem with Naomi and also now Aaliyah for really no reason, just really no backstory to for reason why she hates either one of them too?
Yeah, good topic. And I don't have a good answer, Mike. I mean, maybe you do, but I think that's an issue here. I think that she's playing the role of like the authority figure that is throwing her weight around a little bit. I mean, for sure. I think that's kind of an obvious way to look at what she's doing, and she's doing it to get some heat, but she's doing it without context, without definition, without a reason as to why. And I think what also muddies up that character a little bit is you have Adam Pearce that's supposed to be her equal on the same show that doesn't ever really put her in check, and they don't even show him trying to put her in check at all. So I think, Mike, there is a lot of inconsistency there. I think Sonya Deville is playing to Kyle's point, is playing the role well. It just lacks a little bit of definition. And I think with that, if she can define kind of why this is happening, I think what she does is more effective, and she can actually end up getting more heat with it. But Mike, what say you?
Yeah, none of it makes much sense, especially the longer that it continues. I mean, Deville's treatment of Naomi might be fine if it were really short term and they just used it to get to a match, either like the same night or the next night or the next pay-per-view, which is never going to be more than, you know, 3 or 4 weeks away. But this has been going on for a while, all with no context or explanation, like you said. So it just seems like a personal dislike in a bad way. I mean, I know that a lot of feuds are supposed to be personal or blood feuds, but this is the way this has gone on without explanation is just strange. And so Aaliyah is now in the mix tonight, and hopefully Kyle and I are both being facetious here, but it's almost feels like, well, we don't want her to seem like she's just racist, so let's have her dislike a white woman as well, you know, or maybe she hates black people and Canadians. I'm not sure what what Deville's issue is, but yeah, she just seems kind of sour. And you mentioned Pierce. I'm not as big on him as I was a while ago because I liked him when he was the voice of reason, who was white knuckle trying to drive the show, but could hardly contain the stars around him. Like, he did it really well, and now he's just kind of like butzing around and
I agree.
Not being a voice of reason, even with his peer Deville, who he should be able to confront professionally, and she would listen to him. But he's just in the back seat while she kind of does what she wants with these with Naomi and now Aaliyah. It's weird. Yeah, no answer here either.
Oh gosh! All right, that's it. You're muted. You're muted now. No, I mean, no. But it is. And I think, look, like, WWE should really look at how at this angle in particular, like, and because it seems like because they don't define the reason for this at all. They don't put any context behind it. It's just is kind of happening week to week to week. It's like clearly there's no end game here. And I think that, I mean, it hurts everybody involved. Like, I think in the end, in some way, you know, I don't think anybody without an endpoint here, like, can get fully over. I mean, if the idea here is, okay, we want to make Naomi into a babyface star act that can challenge Charlotte Flair for the title. Okay, great. Well, then you got to, you know, put some definition behind this feud and let her, you know, and let the crowd get behind something. Let them get behind her, you know, every week going up against Deville and trying to, you know, get around the roadblocks that she puts up. But if you don't know why those roadblocks exist, it makes it really hard to cultivate an investment from your audience. And then it kind of leaves Naomi hanging at the end, you know, and it just, she's kind of hanging there with, okay, she had this feud. Maybe it ends in a match. Maybe it doesn't, but, and maybe she even wins. Maybe she even wins that match. Great. But if you don't have an audience that's invested, she's not going to be that star or that figure that you want her to be, Mike.
Right. It's weird. It's so weird how they've prolonged it, or they've been treading water. Like, it almost seems like if there was some explanation given, like maybe they have something in store for them, but Deville has a lingering injury or something, and they were forced into this issue that they didn't plan for, and they aren't do anything about in the meantime. So we just get this repetition. It's not great.
No, it's not. And again, I want to just put over Deville's work. I think she's playing a fun character, like, week to week, you know, and I think she is getting some heat, and that's why it's so tough to see it without any kind of direction, because I think it could be that much more influential for both her and Naomi, and I guess Aaliyah now too, if she had that. So we'll see, Kyle. But back to you. Any comments on our comments or something else altogether?
Yeah, I just thought that I was watching that. I was like, that was so bizarre. If that was the case, then why is she not attacking Sasha then? Because she's also black. So I was like, it's so very weird, but whatever. So I don't know where that's going to go, and I guess we've got to wait and see for that. I'll move on to, I guess, for Charlotte and with her promo and with her and Becky. I'm so even more invested in their match. Like, I think they have great matches in general, Sasha and Charlotte and Becky. And but with this whole thing with them having some issues, you know, I listened to a Becky interview. It was earlier today or yesterday about her problems with Charlotte. She kind of glossed over why she kind of doesn't like Charlotte or have some or have stopped being friends. It's so interesting. So I am intrigued about their match at this point. And I love the fact that Toni Storm is back on TV. Like, thank God. It's like, where has she been? And mm-hmm. then she faces face with Charlotte. They do so and do something with her. I'm surprised she's not even part of Survivor Series. But I mean, at least she actually showed up. Thank God, after disappearing. But so with her going face to face with Charlotte, I think was cool. But what do you think will end up happening overall heading to Charlotte and Becky, and now the added with Toni Storm in the near future? What do you think about that first with Becky and Charlotte?
Yeah, Mike, I'll throw you first on this one.
Well, first of all, I found Charlotte's in-ring promo tonight to be a little strange, heelish. But again, and this is something when Lynch returned at SummerSlam and then in the weeks that followed, I was kind of put off by how I thought Becky was trying to have it both ways. And I kind of got that vibe from Charlotte tonight in terms of heel or babyface. Like telling the crowd she's happy to see them and smiling at everybody and everything. But then her antics in the ring tonight were not that of a babyface. Like telling people that just getting in the ring with her makes them bigger than they were. And she said, you should call me the star maker. And that's not something that not somebody I would look up to who would proclaim that about themselves. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Which means that we're going into a heel matchup at Survivor Series, which I don't know, you know, whatever, but I just feel like they're not fully committing one way or the other. And that I find that irksome. Toni Storm interrupted. That was cool. Very refreshing. And with Kyle, it's cool to see her in the ring. And then more heel antics from Charlotte, just saying, oh, you want to wrestle tonight? And get the crowd amped up a bit and say, mm-hmm. no, absolutely not. And walk out. And also the whole Becky uh-oh bit. in getting the audience involved in an chant, which I think, I don't know, I think WWE is juicing the crowds pretty heavily on their their live programming, so it's hard for me to, like, really grasp how much the crowd is into things like that. But I don't know. I found myself thinking, so she's trying to involve the crowd, a babyface thing. Do you see what I'm saying? So, and I found myself thinking, she's kind of a jerk, but like Austin and The Rock could, in their heydays, could be, had jerkish tendencies, but they were so electric and overflowing with charisma that it didn't matter, and the crowd would be 100% behind them, basically based on how they carried themselves and their coolness. And Charlotte Flair doesn't have that. She's not at that level. Nobody is, hardly anybody's ever at that level. But what she's trying to do reminds me of that and just makes me think, like, you're not cool enough to act like this and get everybody behind you.
Yeah, I have that's well said. And I've got really manic opinion about this whole thing, because on one hand, I think when they get in the ring at Survivor Series and it's Becky Lynch standing opposite the ring of Charlotte Flair, I think all will be well. I think all will be fine. I think it's going to feel like two stars colliding head on. And I think that match will work because they do have kind of this authentic history to play off of. People know the news, you know, where they had that little dust up backstage, that disagreement during the belt swap, you know, that's all there. That's all going to play into it. You know, we reported on pwtorch.com today a little bit, or yesterday, from that article, that interview that Kyle's referencing. And yeah, Becky really, you know, leans into that, whether it's true or not, you know, it doesn't matter. She, you know, leans into it. Hey, we don't get along. We used to be great friends. We're not anymore. So I think when they get it in the ring, that will work for however long that match is. So to that end, okay, I'm intrigued by that. I want to see that match. Now, on the other hand, though, there is inconsistencies all around here, and I think that is going to be the toughest putt for them to sink on this, because you have Becky Lynch and Charlotte facing off each other in a match, and it is two heels. And you know, though, that people are going to cheer Becky Lynch, I think, in that match by a wide margin, is what I would comfortably predict. At the same time, though, on her show, on her brand, you know, you have an underdog babyface act in Liv Morgan, who's going to be going up against Becky Lynch at some point. And so it makes for a really hard dichotomy between those two, because on one hand, the same audience that's watching Survivor Series is going to be rah-rah cheering Becky Lynch. The next night, you're going to expect that audience to flip right back and boo Liv Morgan. On the flip side, with Charlotte Flair, here she is kind of baby-facing opposite Becky Lynch a little bit. She's trying to get the crowd involved. She's trying to drop some baby-face lines in, but she's got this thing going on where she then is supposed to be booed and be the heel opposite Toni Storm. So it's just inconsistency everywhere, and it's a muddy, muddy picture outside of, you know, the 15 or 20 minutes that they'll be in that ring. And So for that reason, I mean, I think that's why, generally speaking, I'm not high on these champion versus champion matches, because it makes it really – it's hard to book. It's hard to book this stuff in a consistent way that makes sense. And, you know, this women's championship versus championship match scenario, for as good as a match as I think it will be, it's the perfect example of that issue. I agree, though, that – I thought Charlotte's promo was a little off tonight. I thought it had its moments of intensity, but it seemed like she kind of lost her direction. It seemed like the uh-oh thing took even if there was some stuff piped in, it took a long time for it to get there. And coming from Charlotte, it didn't seem natural for her to be in the, you know, a type of give and take cadence like that with the crowd. That just didn't seem like, that didn't feel to me like something that she would do. It almost as if like someone came up with that, hey, do this, but it just didn't line up with her character at all. I mean, she's openly dismissive of all the fans, even in that promo a little bit earlier. So to then have her, you know, try to like cadence them into a chant, I thought that was messy. Mike, any other thoughts on that?
No, I think that sums it up. And well, I think that's a good distinction you made about how their match will no doubt be electric, but it's in a vacuum. And then
right.
outside of that, yeah, things go astray. That's a good point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it'll be – not that it won't be fun to see WWE try to juggle this, but, you know, it's just – they do it to themselves every November. I mean, they really do. And you can see – you know, you can see this coming a mile away. So, Kyle, back to you, man. Any other thoughts or any other topics or final comments?
Yeah, my final thing is about Roman Reigns. And look, I think – Roman Reigns is great as a character. He's doing some great work as a heel, but I think the only problem I have is to the point where who is the next challenger for Roman Reigns, like a top star besides Drew McIntyre? Because to me, it feels like even though Roman Reigns is doing some great work, it feels like there's the lack of baby faces on both sides with Charlotte and also with Roman Reigns. Because besides Drew McIntyre and Sasha Banks, in my opinion, who else is there for both Charlotte Flair and Roman Reigns? But Roman Reigns in particular is doing great work. He's doing some great work. I said he turned heel, but the problem is, who is that babyface that can believably can take the title away from Roman Reigns? Because right now he's just too good. And he's been that good for the entire year right now. But I'll leave you with that. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for making it, Kyle. Hopefully you had a really great birthday, man. Happy birthday, and appreciate the call as always,
thanks.
Man.
Yeah, thanks.
So, Mike, Roman Reigns, I mean, it's one of those things. I think it's kind of two questions in there, so maybe we should break them down. I mean, on one hand, if the question is who can Roman Reigns wrestle in a championship-level program, okay, that's one thing. If the question is who can take the Universal Championship off Roman Reigns, I think that's a totally different question. I don't know that person's on the roster right now. I mean, Drew McIntyre is the only one, you know, but they've almost been there and done that, not in like a long-term feud. So to answer that question, I'd say Drew McIntyre is the only person that I can see on the roster today that could do that. Am I forgetting anybody? Like, is there anybody that sticks out to you that could take the belt off of Reigns at this point?
No. I mean, if there's two or three tiers of talent on the show, I think Drew stands alone on the top tier for somebody to challenge or dethrone Roman Reigns. And I mean that not necessarily in the royal sense, since King of the Ring is mixed into all of this and a crown. Wrestlers after that are all secondary, and gosh, nothing comes to mind right off the bat at all as things stand. Now, if they want to invest a few weeks in one or two guys to elevate them, it's definitely possible that you could do that with somebody like Cesaro or Nakamura, or get Kofi back into this. They have, I believe, a storyline injury that they're working right now, a New Day tangling with the Usos and Reigns. You could bring Kofi back strong, at least to challenge. Again, I don't know if it would be to usurp Reigns, but that's a possibility. Or even Woods, like, if they want, like we saw tonight, Woods can hang tough with Roman if things aren't turned against him, numbers-wise. So, but all of those things will take time and effort to make it believable and not just be a quick one-off to fill time. And I don't know, they're going to have to do something, right? Once we're past SummerSlam. So I don't know. Yeah, that's where I think it stands. It's slim pickings for sure.
It is. And I think, like, that's what I mean where, you know, I think a lot of those guys that you mentioned, Cesaro, you can heat him up. Nakamura, same thing. Kofi, absolutely. You know, I think there's an argument for Jeff Hardy too. Like, looking at the pop he got tonight, that was a heck of a match and crowds firmly behind him. You can elevate him to a level in which he can reasonably be in a main event championship match with Roman Reigns. Part of that is because I think those acts are, you know, they're there, but Roman Reigns with this act and this character, he has proven to pull people up to his level. He's done it with Cesaro. He's done it with Jey Uso. He's done it with Rey Mysterio. He's done it, you know, I'd even say with Kevin Owens. So like he has a history of in this role, pulling people from that mid-card level and elevating them to make that championship match makes sense. But I don't see any of those guys beating him for the title. I mean, they just – I don't think that they're – you know, you could heat them up, but I still don't know that they'd have the momentum. I mean, like, Cesaro is somebody that had a decent chunk of momentum coming out of WrestleMania, and it didn't sustain itself. And so this piece of equity that WWE has in Roman Reigns as Universal Champion, I mean, that – they've built him up to the point where – when he loses, it's going to matter, and it's going to mean something, and it's going to mean a big deal. And so unless that picture is crystal clear, or, you know, you get The Rock for a WrestleMania main event, you don't beat him. You just don't beat him until that person comes into focus.
Yeah, that's a good point, that he's not going to lose the belt until they're at a major pay-per-view. And so that's the next one would be WrestleMania. So for that, we've got a few months to even consider it. And that is even contingent on, like you said, if they can get the mega name in there, like The Rock, or I don't know what the plan is for Lesnar's return either. Like, eventually,
right. Yep.
Eventually he'll have paid up his $1 million fine. And, finish his suspension and come back. And so that'll be a possibility. So those two are kind of like, I guess, the more wild cards of the bigger names, but they're just not the reliable names that we can think about week to week.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, like, obviously they're going to go to Drew McIntyre at some point here, you know, and we don't know when that's going to be. But even that, you know, I'm not sure that that's, not that, I mean, Drew's a big star, no doubt about it, but, you know, he's kind of a, he's kind of a made guy. I don't know that beating Roman Reigns elevates him more than he already is as a star. And so, again, there's value in beating Reigns now, and you want to make sure to put that into someone that there's, you know, some long-term viability with. So it'll be interesting to watch that all play out. It's a great little topic there, Kyle. All right, let's keep it going with callers. We'll go to 615 next, then 802 after that. 615, you are up. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling us from tonight.
Zach and Mike, Sean, VFP from Riversboro, Tennessee. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, Sean, doing good. Always great to hear from you, man. What did you think of the show?
Well, first I want to say, Mike, I think it's actually been a while since I've been on with you, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Sean. It's good to talk to you, too. Yeah, I don't think you made it in the last couple times I hosted. I think you're right. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, same here. Kyle, happy birthday, man. Good to hear from you again. Nick, I know the numbers, man. I know you're up. I'll be ready for you, man. Don't worry about it. But I want to say, I will say quick, Nick, Pat was good tonight because he made SmackDown for me. He made it a better show for me. So I did want to throw that out there because I know Pat's been kind of grating at times, but he was pretty good tonight. I liked when he said Sonya sucks and, you know, some of the stuff he did. I thought that was pretty funny. I wanted to go back just to the first segment really fast because I just thought it was bad. I mean, just, you know, bringing the team out, then Sasha, I mean, goes after Shotzi, which I like because I have a thing right now, so I mean I get that, but then they just all start fighting and the team doesn't get along, and that we even really don't care about the team because they've done nothing to get you invested in it. In the investing you do, it's that you just don't care. And then, you know, the match was what it was, the six-man tag, you know, it's just like, okay, put it together for no real reason. So I wanted to say, I mean, you could talk about that real quick, but I just thought it was bad. It's just what WWE does, their thing. And And going into Sasha against Shotzi next week, how do you guys feel about that? Because I didn't think they would go to the match that fast. So what did you guys think about the first segment?
Yeah, Sean, you took the rant right out of my mouth, my friend. Right out. I had almost exactly what you said verbatim, like written in my notes. Like it's so frustrating to watch because you see it every single year for Survivor Series. And I think, you know, there's the good chance and good money on turning on Raw next week or on Monday and seeing the same type of, oh, can this team get along? And it's just, you know, we've seen it far too much at this point in time. And it's like, to see them all melt down, it's like there's nobody to get behind. Nobody's likable in that situation. I don't think anybody, you know, from a fan perspective is going to go, wow, this team that's melting down, I really am going to cheer them on. Like, baby faces, heels, it doesn't matter. They all look, you know, petty, and it's just like, you guys are adults. You guys have this match that's supposed to mean something, that's supposed to matter, you know, for even at whatever, bragging rights, whatever. Like, in the WWE ecosystem, that's supposed to matter, and yet, you know, you can't put your differences aside for, like, 2 weeks to be able to do that. And so it's like they have this little storyline so they can get through TV, but then when it comes time to actually have the match, there's no interest because there's nothing a part of this to get behind from this team perspective. And I think Shotzi versus Sasha Banks next week, I mean, I agree. I think it's a little premature and also counterproductive to this Survivor Series team story. Again, for the second week in a row at that point, it's like you have two people in a blood feud that are going to team up in 2 days' time after that, and blood feuds being overdramatic, but in a feud, and they're going to be fighting against each other. It's like, it's just way overdone. It's predictable. I think it'd be way more interesting to just watch these teams try to gel, and instead of fighting each other, go, hey, we got to, you know, whatever, band together and take on Raw. I mean, it sounds silly, but it's like, if you're going to do it, do it. Otherwise, it's all a mess, and it's messier than brand versus brand to begin with. So, okay, I'll breathe now. Mike, over to you.
All right. I didn't know if I was going to be backed into this corner so easily, but I'll say it. I don't really give a damn about Survivor Series or the weeks leading up to it. And it's for these reasons. It feels like, well, it was just a made-up pay-per-view in the first place, like 20-some-odd years ago, whatever. And they've stuck with it, and they stuck with its gimmick, which means that much like naming a pay-per-view after a match type like Hell in a Cell, they're just shoehorned, and they're shoehorning themselves into doing these matches that don't have any real stakes, and it's hard to book toward them because by your own design, the wrestlers are on different shows, so they can't interact. So it really bugs me. So, yeah, I like the idea that Zach presented of what if a team – just actually really wanted to win for the sake of competition, or even though it's even more stupid, for the sake of their show, their brand, you know, but they can never get along. And even speaking of Pat McAfee tonight, I think it was McAfee that shouted something like everybody hates everybody. Once all the
yes,
women
he did, broke yes. out
and started brawling. And that sums it up. Like they're announcing it to us. Like that's their thing. And I always want to lead into that. If more so with the women, because I still feel that like WWE thinks like, oh, women, they're all catty and they hate each other and the claws are coming out and people love watching that conflict. And it just went from 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds. And it didn't make sense. Like the brawl and then, oh, you come back. Oh, now we've got a nice neat 3-on-3 match. And it's, I don't know. It's a mess. I don't care for it. And I'm just piling on the rant. It's a 3-way rant we've got here.
3-way rant.
Good job.
But deservedly so, you know, I mean, again, it's like, this is their pay-per-view. You know, it's like, I have no problem. I'm even a little bit more lenient on Survivor Series as a concept, even though, yes, I don't think it works and it doesn't really make sense as much as it did back when it was created, obviously, because you see on a week to week basis, you know, 8-man tags, 10-man tags, like it's not a rarity to see, you know, top stars tagging together like it was when, you know, Survivor Series was created. But even that aside, okay, WWE decides to themselves, okay, we're going with this. We're going with this pay-per-view. We're going with this theme. Just put some stakes behind it. Put anything behind it. Like, you're like SmackDown, if they win, they get the whatever, the number 30 entrant into the Royal Rumble or $100,000, like something, you know? And if you do that, you can have all these characters and these teams pointing in a direction. And yeah, you know, whatever. If it's for money, okay. It's a little cheesy for sure, but at least it's something. And if they're not flailing around with no, you know, constitution behind these teams in general. And it's just the way they have it laid out now, it lacks for any type of unique storyline. It's like all they can go to is this, oh, can this team get along, you know? And we've seen it now for, what, three, four years. Sean, back to you, my friend.
No, you guys, you know, you guys said it. I mean, Raw versus SmackDown right now, who cares? Like, nobody gives a crap. Like, just stop with the Raw versus SmackDown with the brand thing. It's just stop with it. Nobody cares. Two more quick things I was going to bring up that were a little bit different. The first, Zach, when you were going back, when you want to talk about Sammy, I kind of did as well with the Sammy and Jeff match. It was like, I thought the match was good. I didn't think it was great. I thought it was fine. I mean, the crowd made it better because they were getting into it, and they do love Jeff Hardy, as do we all. We all enjoy Jeff Hardy. And I've been loving Sammy's heel stuff. I never thought I would when he first became a heel, but I really do. You know, I enjoy what he does. I get a kick out of him generally every week, except last week. I didn't really care for the Hit Row stuff because it made them look kind of stupid. But I don't know if I want, as much as Jeff Hardy's a star and he's a legend in the business, in WWE, to have Sammy just continually lose. I just feel like every time I watch Sammy lose, I see how they've just ruined him, in the sense of he came into WWE on the main roster. He was an awesome babyface. The fans wanted to get behind him so bad. And they turned him and they wrestled him against KO 50 billion times. Everybody lost interest in that. And now he's just a heel, even though a good heel, losing every single time. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with most of that. I mean, I thought the match was good, and I think you're right. Like, the crowd elevated it, and their interest in Hardy. And, like, I don't want to say I was surprised at how over Jeff Hardy was, because, you know, he regularly gets good pops. But, man, I mean, they had that audience rocking there. And I thought that usually means that you're clicking on something from a match perspective. So two things on Sami Zayn, and then, Mike, I'll toss to you. One thing that stood out to me tonight was just his dedication to, like, whatever he's doing out there. Like, I don't, you know, yes, people like Jeff Hardy, but people really wanted to see Jeff Hardy beat Sami Zayn. And I think a lot of that, like, rests on Sami Zayn's shoulders. I mean, he really plays this obnoxious conspiracy theory heel character to a T, and he puts his all into it, like the facial expressions, the body language, the obnoxious attitude. And, he sold the loss at the end, and he sold it, you know, the match going in. Like, he was just completely flabbergasted that he'd have to wrestle for his slot when he thought he was the captain, right? Like, I thought he's able, because he's so skilled, to really tap into something, and what he's involved with get strong reactions because of the groundwork that he helps to lay. And it's not anything against Hardy. I think Hardy did his thing too, but really it was built on the shoulders of Sami Zayn, in my opinion. And because of that, I think you're leaving money on the table with him. I don't know, Mike, that Sami Zayn is going to be somebody that carries the Universal Championship. I don't know that he's going to be somebody that is good. I'd venture to say that he's not going to be somebody at this point that's going to carry the world title. But I think he can be somebody that flirts with that main event picture, whether it's, just somebody at the top-ish of the card that can have really personal feuds and as a heel or a babyface. But in order to do that, you got to recognize that, hey, this guy's bringing it. Yeah, we're having him lose. You know, what if we gave him a couple W's? Like, what if we put a little juice behind him? Not the rocket strap to his back, but just a little something to make what he does matter more. Your take, Mike.
I think almost no matter what you would try to do with Sami Zayn, it would be hard to ever say that you're asking too much of him or that you're trying to do too much with him. And to a point, of course, and that goes right up about to what you were just saying. Like, he might not be the guy to carry the company or be the face of the company or be a long-term champion, but of course he can flirt with it. To Sean's point, he definitely had the crowd behind him back when he was kind of like the skanking baby face dancing to the ring and all of that, with his old theme music back from NXT or whatever. And, but if he's good at anything more than that, it's how he behaves as a heel. And I kind of feel like WWE loves so much how he behaves as a heel. And like Zach said, how much he invests in whatever they hand to him. He makes everything look good. And it's for better or worse, like that can get you into a corner from which there's no escape in this company,
yeah.
Which, you know, he's going to make really good money for as long as he wants to do this, I bet. But I feel like they just see that he can turn anything they hand him into something usable. And I also do agree that most of the heat tonight came from Sammy. I'm kind of lukewarm on Jeff. Like, I just, at this point, like, I didn't grow up, like, being huge into the Hardys, so I don't have a big nostalgic thing for Jeff or Matt. And now I just sort of see a legacy star that everybody respects. And how the hell he's done this for as long as he has is some kind of arcane magic. I'm not sure. But I just don't get that excited for him. And I think it was a really nice touch talking about Sammy selling how this match went. He was sort of hanging against the middle rope staring at the big screen.
So
and they took his image off of the Survivor Series of five men who are representing SmackDown. His image vanished. And I thought, what a... What a jerk move of the company to like make a big display of that right in front of him while they're playing Hardy's music, no less. You know, I thought that was a funny touch and made funny even more so because of how Sammy was dealing with it, which was not well. It was good.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yep, I thought the same thing. And yeah, that, a good example of what I mentioned of like him just leaning into this a little bit extra, like a little extra oomph goes a long way. And I think you're right. I mean, and you know, John Moxley talked a little bit about this too in some of his interviews. I think it was the one with Wade when you know when he left WWE. In that, like, hey, you can be really good at what they ask you to do, and that's good. But because of that, you end up being stuck in that position. And I think Moxley found that out. Like, hey, he could do comedy. Let's have him do you know funny comedy stuff. And they stayed there with it. And so it's a predicament a little bit as a performer, because on one hand you're Sami Zayn and you're getting a lot of TV time. You're getting a long match. You're getting a couple backstage vignettes on a week to week basis. You know, that's, you have value to the company in that role. Yeah. You're not the champion and yeah, you're not in these serious segments, but you're, you know, you're on TV. And so that it's just a different type of role. And you know, it's certainly probably a lucrative one. I think, you know, The Miz is a lot like that, like not going to be your top guy, but is all over the TV shows for better or worse. And so, you know, that's, you know, that doesn't happen unless Vince McMahon has trust in you and believes in you as a performer, even if you're not presented in the most serious way. Sean, back to you, man. Anything else for us tonight?
Yeah, the last thing I wanted to bring up was actually, I mean, it was kind of quick again with the Ridge Holland, you know, interview. And, you know, I think Ridge so far, you know, just in a couple interviews, has had a good presence about him. I like, you know, just, he seems like a good talker, you know, he's, I like him. And then then they came right out basically and said, you know, he said that him and Sheamus are going to be a better team than Cesaro and Sheamus ever were. And I guess in my mind, I assumed that's what they were gonna do with them, have them be a tag team, and Ridge eventually turn on Sheamus. But it just seems really predictable to me. I'm like, oh, I just kind of figured that was gonna happen. Put them in a tag team, they're good for a while, and then Ridge turns on them. They lose a match, he gets mad and just goes nuts on them, which is fine. I mean, I want Sheamus to be a babyface now because he's had a good heel run, and it's time to finally switch him around. I want to hear what you guys thought about that. And then one quick thing I wanted to bring up was I like what they did with Los Lotharios. They gave them the win, which was predictable, as you said, Zach, but good, the right thing to do. And I think at this point they got to get the tag team titles as much as it's – I mean, it helps the Usos with Roman having the titles, but if you're just going to have them hold the titles and nobody ever go after them, I just feel like, again, the tag team titles, just, it makes them even more meaningless in the sense of just people fighting for the titles and, you know, so I wish they would do that. So what do you guys think about those two things? Mike, appreciate you, man. Zach, I'll be keeping up with all your guys' coverage this weekend with Full Gear, and I always appreciate you guys taking my call.
Always appreciate you making it, Sean. Thanks very much for some good topics, and always a blast to talk to you, man. Yeah, so Mike, what did you think of the Sheamus stuff? I'm kind of where Sean's at, and I hope in this instance, my hope is that they just kind of hurry it up with it. Like, I don't need to see, you know, Ridge Holland and Sheamus as this tag team that, you know, breaks up 2 months time. Like, I think in this instance, you kind of pull the trigger early. Like, you have Ridge Holland try to, like, bait Sheamus with this, hey, I respect you, we're going to be a tag team. And then just right out of the gate, just have Holland turn. You know, have Holland turn and go, hey, you know, I just wanted you in the ring. I wanted to prove myself, you know, opposite you. And just go with it. Because I just don't – I think to Sean's point, you know, if you team them up, you know the end game. Like, you know, you can just – forecast it a mile away. So instead of investing in them as a team, you just invest in the long game. Okay, when is this going to happen? When's the breakup going to happen? And so if it's me, I like the idea of the feud. I like the idea of Sheamus versus Ridge Holland. I think that could work. And I think that could really help Ridge Holland in particular kind of elevate a little bit, getting in there with somebody the caliber of Sheamus who's been on, who's just been on a roll lately from a match perspective. Get him in there. Like, don't, you know, beat around the bush with this thing. Holland's a heel, Sheamus is a babyface. Go that route. Just play that card right away. That'd be what I do. What about you?
Yeah, I could really go either way with it, I think. It's not like it would hurt to have a fourth or a fifth tag team on the roster, at least temporarily. I know that's predictable, but I think they could still tell an interesting story with one sort of being the apprentice for the other and then how that goes awry. Because that's a little more interesting than a random teaming up. So they've already established that if those two tag together, Ridge Holland and Sheamus, that it's not random. Like tonight, Holland kind of spelled it out about how he looks up to Sheamus, and he saw that somebody who had a similar upbringing could actually make something out of his life or whatever. So I wouldn't mind the idea of trying to learn from Sheamus, but being too impatient and Sheamus eventually not putting up with that, not suffering the younger inexperienced fool. And that would be okay. If they want to fast forward that and get right to a feud between them, fine. Either way, it's a little bit exciting because Ridge Holland is fresh blood, and that's a good thing. Like, we say all the time, like, they don't build stars. Well, here's a chance to start doing that now on the main roster, and who knows where it goes. But, yeah, it's good to see any fresh blood, especially with Sheamus, who's really good.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, yeah, fresh is good. And I think, you know, I think Ridge Holland is, to this point, I mean, what's your feeling on him? I mean, I think he's held his own, like, in some of those backstage vignettes and promo interviews and things that he's been asked to do in the ring. I think, we've seen maybe a squash match or two. So, you know, I'm not ready to completely cast him aside as someone who could be a player. I mean, clearly he's got a long way to go, but man, you're in there with Sheamus. I mean, you're going to learn a thing or two for sure.
Absolutely. And the one thing that stood out to me tonight was that Ridge Holland's backstage interview. He did the interview in that stereotypical way that everybody makes fun of with how WWE wrestlers watch matches on TVs backstage, where they stand kind of in line with the TV and crane their necks awkwardly. That's how he did the interview. The woman was, I forget who it was, but he was being interviewed by a woman, and he was standing like almost facing away from her, and it didn't look natural at all, like how you just sort of turn to face somebody if they are talking to you with a microphone, and he wouldn't do that. It's as though she were a monitor with a match on it that he was like awkwardly watching. But, you know, one of the many details I like to point out on these bizarre shows.
Yeah, no, no, that's good. No, I mean, I love that kind of, you know, analysis. So that's good stuff. I didn't notice that. Yeah. Anything, I mean, what do you think his ceiling is, Mike? I mean, is when you look at him now, I mean, like, do you look at him and say, all right, in 3 years time or 2 years time, he's a top level player? Can you not make a judgment on that right now? Like, where are you at just on his ceiling?
I mean, right in the middle, I guess. Like, he hasn't done anything. Like, I thought he's fine on the microphone in the limited spurts that I've seen him. He's been on Main Event and was fine. And at this point, the good news is that he doesn't seem problematic, you know? So,
yeah.
That makes me think it's easy to move upward. And like you said, Zach, especially with somebody like Sheamus, that's a great way to learn, I think, a lot in a little bit of time on the job.
Yeah. Yep. Well said. All right. Let's keep it going. 802. That's Nick. Sorry to keep you waiting, man.
Oh, no problem.
What'd you think of the show? Good to talk to you.
Well, I'm going to make it a fatal four way. my rant on the opening segment was they built up this feud between Shotzi Blackheart, and I'm going to say her last name, and Sasha Banks, and then during the melee they've got Sasha fighting Shayna. I mean, it's like it was just very. Just totally non sequitur, and that's the end of that rant. Charlotte sounded like a 3-year-old. I thought she's not doing the robot voice anymore, but whoever scripted this was just, and I was watching the audience in back of her, and it was all Sweetener. I didn't see anybody in back of her going, you know, doing, you know, making the noise or anything. I think with the Survivor Series thing is, I think they're really hurting from the fact that their roster is so small, so that they have to put heels and baby faces on the same team together. Instead of having, like, the SmackDown team is the heels, and so you have five heels, and the Raw team are all babyface, but they don't have enough people for the women or the men. I mean, the men, they've got a little bit more leeway, but, you know. And then what is Von Wagner doing on this show?
That's in my notes. Okay, good. Good.
And then what are Sheer... I mean, the Hit Row, Jinder Mahal, the Shanky, it was like, what, are they having a rap ball? I mean, it was just, oh, my God. It was just, I can't tell you how much Hit Row misses B-Fab. She just added that little extra spice that made them so much better. And it's almost like they should split them up and just have Swerve Scott go off and do his thing and have the other two guys be a tag team. And then my final point, I'm just ranting here. My final point is, I thought the match, the Xavier Roman match, was really good. Between the two entrances, I think it was 15 minutes between the two entrances. But the match was really good, and they both were performing really well, and they were both selling well, which I think Roman doesn't get enough credit for his selling. I think he does a very good job selling. But I'm really concerned about the crown. I think, Roman's smiling and stuff. I'm just worried that WWE won't understand that it is a joke, and they're gonna. I so hope they don't have him. It scares me. You know, I mean, it would be so much better if at the beginning of the next show they have Roman come out and just rip it apart or something. But I mean, it scares me that they can't help themselves, and they're gonna. I don't know if they can ruin him. He's so good. They're doing so much good, but that they might go with that. And last point, and then I'll shut up, is I watched it. I rewatched it back, and both Paul and Cole said if Roman doesn't get it done, he has to bend the knee. But he lost the match. Shouldn't he have had to bend the knee or leave forever? Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I mean, yep, there's some nuance there for sure. Because, he did say that, didn't he? Like, if he doesn't get it done. My guess is they'll lean the other way on that and go, well, Woods never pinned me.
That's what I mean. They were very careful to say
he
doesn't get it done, and he didn't get it done. The fact that it was cheating, but... You know, it was they were very careful with the words, but he also lost the match.
Yeah, no, I mean, and hey, maybe they will lean into that. Maybe it'll be Big E, that comes out and kind of says that. And in regards to the crown, I'm with you. Like I am sitting here today looking at this, going, okay, that this worked and was fine because, they mocked it and that's it. If Roman Reigns comes out next week wearing that crown, that, that undoes all the analysis that I've done to this point. That is a major problem. I'm with you on that, Nick. Mike, Nick brought up some good topics that we haven't gotten to yet, and one of them being Hit Row. I think the Hit Row group was really fresh upon hitting the scene of SmackDown, and I think they, clicked down in NXT and just were kind of made for the main roster in that, just with that gimmick and that freshness, and just a handful of weeks in now, like Nick, I'm worried about where they're going. They're kind of toiling with Jinder and Shanky, and I'm not nearly as high on that act as I was just 2 weeks ago. Where are you?
Yeah, it is a little strange that they've lost one of their members, and predictably, unless they did last week, and I don't remember, but did they make any mention of being down a member?
Or are they I don't think so.
They're just going ahead like nothing happened, which is about what I would expect on a WWE show. So that's a little weird. It's distracting when a key member is just gone and they act like nothing happened. Tonight's it was a backstage pre-recorded thing, and it was challenging for me to hear what they were saying, like because of the audio mix. Like they had a backbeat playing throughout their whole deal or promo, and it was hard for me to hear what they were saying because of that mix. Zach, you asked what's in store for them. Well, we saw Jinder Mahal and Shanky are what's in store for them. I mean, you got to start somewhere, I guess, if you're a fresh new act, and that would be starting at the bottom. That's not great either, because that was some bullshit. Whatever Mahal and Shanky were doing was...
oh, my God. Awful.
Yeah, it was not good. And it wasn't funny. I guess they're the heels, so maybe it's supposed to be irritating, and I want to see somebody shut them up, I guess. I don't know. But it felt awkward watching it.
Right.
Like, fake. Like, Hit Row, you can tell that... This is something that they're probably into. Like, there wasn't a random writer they never met that came up with all of this for them, and then they're just pulling it off the way that we see, which is exactly what is happening with Mahal and Shanky. Like, it's right. just like a clown show. So, I don't know. That makes me think that that feud, and Nick mentioned this, I guess two of the three members of Hit Row will tag against Mahal and Shanky, but I fear that it will, that feud will be a clown show based on the introduction we saw tonight, and I don't know if that's good for anybody. Like, they might just be sentenced to tier three, you know, yeah. and seen as a novelty and little more.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, you're right. I want to, you know, if WWE, if you could trust them to, okay, yep, they're in at the ground floor, but, you know, they're going to work their way up. And they had, you know, a recent track record of that coming through and coming to fruition. Okay, then you say, all right, great, Hit Row's in, they're on the main roster, and now they start. But so often, you stay at the level you're brought in at. And I think if you're Hit Row right now, you're going, uh-oh, like, this isn't great. And I think what made their act work, in NXT and what made it kind of special, like one of those acts that you could look at and go, man, like, yes, this is a good NXT act, but it's also a good main roster act too. It kind of crosses both boundaries, is that they were able to kind of lean into being serious. It wasn't just, you know, like a rap gimmick just to have one, and then the heels made fun of that and did their little rap too. It was rooted in something more serious. The tone was different, and I think that balance helped them because they were able to kind of do backstage. They were able to do kind of like a main roster type thing with the that concert that they did in the ring, or where they which was really cool. And to strip that away and just have it be a one-note act, to me it takes away some of the pizzazz that it had, and which is unfortunate because I think that group is really talented, but I think they're missing BFAB too. Nick, back to you. Any other comments? Great topic.
Yeah,
I'm glad you brought up Hit Row because that's
great. Yeah. Well, no, it was, what was it, 3 weeks ago where they had they premiered, you know, where they came out, all four of them, and they had that rap down, and it was on tune, it was, you know, and they looked big time, you know. Now the backstage thing, they just looked bleh. And I just just remind you, you know, just to, and I'll hang up and let you talk about it, but I'll just say these two words: Von Wagner.
Yes. We will pay him attention. Yes, some attention.
All right. You guys have a good weekend and enjoy Full Gear.
Yeah, you too, Nick. Thanks for the call. Great to talk to you as always, man. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Yeah, Mike, I don't know what to make of Mr. Von Wagner tonight. I mean, like seeing him in that role tonight, just on the screen, next to Adam Pearce, no real, unless I missed it, there was no definition or introduction. He was just kind of there. I've been defending NXT 2.0 in that, hey, look, you know, for better or worse, they need new stars on the main roster. And, you know, I think it's not unreasonable to look at it and go, hey, the guys that you were sending up, yeah, maybe they're great, but I don't want them. And if that's going to be the case over and over and over again, it's your company, cultivate stars and build stars that you actually want to push. And so, seemingly, that's what they started to do in NXT 2.0. Obviously, there's in-depth analysis that can and has been done on that topic. I'm being overly, you know, I'm oversimplifying it here just for the sake of this argument. But, you know, so for that defense to carry any sort of weight, though, when you do feature that guy who's down in NXT 2.0 developing, you got to make it worth something on the main roster when he debuts. He can't just stand next to somebody without any sort of lead in, without any sort of introduction, with nothing. He looked silly up there. And I just, I'm looking at it going, all right, Von Wagner clearly, again, for better or worse, is somebody that they're paying attention to. He's got size. He's got the look Vince McMahon likes. He can go a little bit in the ring. He certainly has a ways to go to get to where he needs to be. But, you know, he checks a lot of the boxes, hence the push and the focus and the attention he's gotten on NXT 2.0. But then to not continue with that framing on the main roster when you're going to present him there, it was flabbergasting to me, Mike. I just am watching this going, okay, now who knows what the point of this 2.0 thing was. You're bringing up talent that you seemingly have a plan for or that you like and giving him no direction right out of the gate.
Yeah, I think you touched on it. Von Wagner, height, 6'5". I think that's all you really need to know with why he's on the main roster. And that's how much thought must have gone into it. And he was stood next to Pierce and made to look noticeably taller and said nothing, looked like he didn't understand what anybody was saying around him, blank-faced, confused, much like the viewer would be with his presence. And then I think it was McAfee, and this seals the deal on the size thing. McAfee said something like, is Von Wagner, is that guy 10 feet tall? Oh my God. He couldn't get over how tall he was. So that's Vince's thing. It feels like he saw there is a tall guy that he could take. What are we going to do with him? Let's put him on screen. Let the people marvel at him. Look at him. And that's it. I can't, what else? That's all that I saw tonight.
And I think that's just
hollow.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. And it just shouldn't be. I mean, it just shouldn't be. And again, I'm not advocating for, you know, Von Wagner. I don't know yet. There's nothing to tell. But it's like, if you're going to try to build these new stars, like, then you have to present them that way. And that was not a star-making presentation of Von Wagner. It's like, who is this goof standing there? And, you know, that's a problem. It doesn't matter the stars that you build in NXT or otherwise if you don't present them the right way on the main roster. I mean, it just doesn't. And this was it was funny more than anything else. And honestly, because you know the hype thing about Vince McMahon, I was looking at it going, I kind of had a different reaction. I was like, man, yeah, Von Wagner's tall, but he's not that much taller than Adam Pearce. Like, that's another reason why he's not – this is silly, because it's not like he's towering over him. You know, they were comparable, but it wasn't like, you know, Omos. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't have that type of impact for me from a look perspective.
Yeah, you're definitely right on that. Like, if only given the Pearce, like, size comparison and – also, bear in mind, WWE is not above, like, making people stand awkwardly so that they seem shorter, like, by spreading your feet apart, you know what I mean, into a wide stance, or by putting someone else on a box or whatever. But, yeah, that shot alone with Pierce wasn't everything, but it was more McAfee's reaction and announcing of how tall he was, or he must be 10 feet tall, which, to me, was said a lot about what Vince must think.
Yeah. But you're right, though. I mean, it's hollow. It's just, I mean, that's it. Like, you just can't lean on just that. And, you know, if that's how they're going to treat these new NXT guys and women, it's like, all right, it just doesn't matter who you bring up. If that's the end game, oh, he's tall, put him on television. It just doesn't work that way. All right, let's continue on with the calls here. We will go to 619. 619, you're up. Thank you so much for waiting. What did you think of the show tonight? State your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is William from San Diego. How you guys doing?
Doing good. Did you say William?
Yes, William.
Yeah, William, great to hear from you, man. What did you think of SmackDown?
I thought it was okay. I didn't really know if I was going to start off with this topic, but I think it segues into something that I've been thinking about recently, which is that obviously prior to the draft, they relied a lot on Roman Reigns as their top act, and it worked out. He was entertaining. He was great. He had a lot of great opponents. But you also had a lot of other acts that were doing a lot of great work. You had Becky, you had Belair, you had Edge, Seth Rollins. Roman has this big attraction, having all these great feuds. And then you had all this great filler on the side that kept you, you know, satisfied while you were waiting for the Roman segments. But now, post-draft, it feels like the roster has been drained, and they're still putting a lot of eggs in that Roman basket. But right now, I'm just not that into the Roman feud with Xavier Woods. Xavier feels like a comedy act with the whole King gimmick. And so it's not been enjoyable. I don't know. How do you guys feel about SmackDown recently overall, post-draft?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point and fair criticism. You know, like before, yeah, he had a supporting cast. I mean, Roman was clearly, as you said, the main attraction, and he still is, and he still is getting a lot of TV time, and he should. But yeah, I mean, when you pivot from, you know, Seth versus Edge as like the tier two feud to, I don't know, what do you call it? I mean, Jeff Hardy versus Sami Zayn, right? I mean, like Sasha Banks versus Shotzi. I mean, that's a pretty significant drop off, Mike.
Yeah, and it's really building on what we talked about earlier tonight with on both the men's and the women's side. Yeah, once you have Reigns and you have Charlotte, and then it's a steep drop off now with the roster as it stands, and barring the introduction of wild cards that aren't roster regulars, it's shallow. And William mentioned Reigns. Like, I kind of watched the episode tonight thinking, yeah, it's Survivor Series stuff, so it's not going to be top-notch no matter what, even no matter the difficulties that they're facing with the roster depth. But I was thinking, whatever they do with Reigns in the main event with Woods, that will be the most interesting thing on the show. And, yeah, I think it with William, but I'm not as high on what they're doing with Reigns and the Usos as I was, you know, a year ago, for sure. And I don't know. I just found a lot more intrigue when there was internal strife with Roman and one or both of the Usos than there is now, where it's just Roman and the Usos, and he's a jerk. He's definitely far and away the biggest star and a fantastic wrestler, and like Zachy touched on earlier, people have good matches with Roman Reigns. He's really good. And I think Nick was saying his selling is fantastic if it's an important match. But I'm just not as high on what they're doing with the bloodline as I was months ago. And that's still the highlight of the show. You know what I mean? So the whole show is kind of going downhill a little bit for me.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I wonder how much, and I'm totally, you know, freestyling this here, but you bring up kind of like the fact that the story with the bloodline has changed, and it's maneuvered from, hey, like Roman Reigns is this manipulative heel champion, you know, leader of the bloodline, leader of the family, and he's, you know, openly manipulating his cousins and Paul Heyman in a bad way, in a mean way, and like that worked so well. And I wonder though, like if they pivoted, you know, from that type of nuanced, intricate story, because they had a lot, like they were still in the pandemic era of this during that time. Like you had the Thunderdome, right? You didn't have to cater to, you know, an arena full of fans where, hey, if Roman Reigns is going to be on TV, we want to see him out in the ring, right? And so you had a little bit more leeway to do deeper storytelling with longer backstage stuff and more pre-production than WWE already has. And so, again, I think you're right. I think it's lost some steam because you don't have that kind of interaction. I wonder though if that's just hard to pull off in a live environment when you're in the ring. Some of the nuance is lost potentially.
I I for sure it would be. I just don't think they should have to sacrifice that kind of nuance or storytelling because they have live arenas again. And you never want to not have live arenas, but the people in attendance are a very small fraction of who sees the product that night. So they can still do it for the sake of the viewers at home. And
yep.
To hell with the people in the arena for a 5-minute backstage segment. They can try to read lips. You know, I've been to a lot of WWE shows. You can never hear what clearly what they're saying backstage because of the audio setup. But yeah, I just don't think it's necessary. That, like you said, Zach, it might have been born out of necessity in the Thunderdome era, but
right.
I don't think it's necessary to do away with that sort of performance just because we're out of the Thunderdome era.
I think you're right, and Reigns was so good in that role too. Like, just, I mean, I think, look, I think this character of his would have gotten over it anyway. You know, I think it's that good, but. You know, having that time to be really intimate, you know, with your audience and tell that really like deep story and showcase that kind of just awful character, like that. I think that helped position him to where he is right now from a fan reaction standpoint. The storyline's waning. I'm with you on that for sure. But you know, they pop for him. You know, and that's still a big thing too. William, back to you. Hopefully, we kind of. You know, we went a little long on your little, I'm going to drop this in topic, but you have anything else for us tonight?
I'll just say that it's kind of irritating because I think last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, Roman had that dig about how, you know, Raw is terrible or something. And, you know, recently I think Raw has actually been the better show. So it was kind of silly that, they're throwing Raw under the bus when it's actually been improving and they already have these terrible ratings. And you would hope that with all the good work that they've been doing recently, that they would actually, you know, want to throw more viewers their way. But that's neither here nor there. What I really wanted to talk about was the Charlotte promo. I know you guys already talked about it, but I'm starting to see I'll call them red flags that don't have me really looking forward to the match at Survivor Series. When the whole backstage thing happened and, you know, it wasn't exclusively backstage, we saw it on camera between Charlotte and Becky. I, like a lot of the internet, was suddenly interested in seeing that match at Survivor Series. But now it seems like they're really playing into that whole idea of, you know, making references to the whole controversy. And it's almost like WWE is giving us permission to talk about it, which takes a lot of the excitement of that whole thing being kind of taboo and, you know, oh, we're not supposed to be talking about it, or, oh, we heard about something that we're not supposed to be hearing about. So that's one thing. And the other thing is that you already touched about it, but we have a heel going up against a heel, and people have been making comparisons with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. But at the end of the day, you know, regardless of whether or not Bret and Shawn hated each other in real life, you still had a likable baby face in Bret Hart going up against a cocky, arrogant, unlikable Shawn Michaels. And now, the red flag that I mentioned is that when Charlotte was making her entrance, they mentioned how, oh, we've seen a lot of controversy over the years in Survivor Series. And a couple of weeks ago, they also brought up the Montreal Screwjob. They made like a package to kind of remind people like, hey, this is something that happened years ago. Don't be surprised if something like this happens again. So, I don't know. Do you think... I'm not feeling good about the match. I feel like they're going to do a screwy finish, something that'll just leave people unsatisfied because going into it, I can't see either Becky or Charlotte taking a clean loss. you hear about how Charlotte is difficult to work at, how she has heat, but she's kind of a, you know, a monster of their own creation. They've been protecting her all these years, and I don't think that all of a sudden they're just going to start having her take clean losses, even if it's to someone the caliber of Becky Lynch. And obviously, I don't see Becky taking a clean loss either. So, I don't know. What do you guys think the finish is for that match?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good – so a couple things there, William, that I want to run with. One of them, before we get into kind of like, you know, prediction, like, I do think there's something to what you said of and WWE is, I mean, they certainly have a history of this, but like just choking the life out of something that's organic, you know, and instead of just letting it breathe and letting it go and letting it just be a thing on its own, their reaction is to pounce on it. And sometimes, you know, it works. Sometimes you can take that and have it be a moment like, you know, the Becky Lynch picture thing with the blood coming off her face. And like, man, that, you know, they blasted that picture everywhere and social media buzzing. And it turned out to be, you know, a major, major career moment for her and a star making moment for her. So there is a plus side to that. Sometimes, but sometimes you need to let these things just breathe, let them live in an organic place, and just let it be there, let it simmer, let it be kind of an underlying dramatic part of, you know, their interaction and the match. And I think this is the case for that. Like, you don't need to beat everybody over the head with, hey, they have history. We know that, you know? I mean, show some video packages if you want to talk about it, but like this, they don't like each other thing. It's like, they're trying to say it, you know, without saying it. And so I think that hurts some of the fun and the drama that they could have with the underlying real tension that's clearly there. So Mike, that's my take on that. As far as how they booked this thing. Yeah. I mean, I don't see them. I think it's going to be some sort of shenanigan finish. I think one of them is going to get pinned in that match, but I think they're going to book it in a way that protects them. And I'll go out on a limb here. What are we, 2 weeks out, and say that, you know, Charlotte eats the pin, but there will be, you know, but buts around it, but this, but that, that's my take. Mike, what about you?
Yeah. Having a wonky finish is kind of the name of the game with a Survivor Series match with the two biggest stars of the women's division, because again, and we touched on this earlier, like the nature of the pay-per-view pits champions against one another in ways that are often awkward. And if I'm the company, I don't want to outright say that one's better than the other cleanly. So I think Becky seems like she's got maybe more guile than Charlotte, so I'll also, I guess, predict her to win, but it will not be a clean finish. But I can only hope, because William mentioned the Shawn and Brett Survivor Series, the screw job in Montreal, that they don't try to replicate that. If they did hint at that in some way, I hope it was just for the sake of history or whatever, but I hope it's not something as in-depth as that. That would be a little too on the nose, you know, like look what we're doing for the anniversary of this event. It will be some sort of screwy finish, but hopefully not to that extreme.
Right. I agree. I mean, I just don't. Yeah, I don't see it going totally clean. You know, someone's getting pinned, I think, but it won't be in a way that really kind of settles anything between those two. That's for sure. William, any final comments or topics for us tonight?
Yeah, I'll just mention briefly about that thing about how sometimes it's better if WWE leaves things alone. I think Becky did an interview with Sports Illustrated, and she was kind of playing into that whole backstage heat thing. And, you know, I give Becky a lot of credit. I think she's a great promo, but when that when they went to that question, it kind of did start feeling kind of scripted or kind of like a work, and especially because Sports Illustrated has that kind of relationship with WWE where, you know, they're not going to talk about things that WWE doesn't want to talk about. And now you add this promo from Charlotte tonight into the mix, and I've already started seeing people talk about, oh, how the whole backstage thing was a shoot. A work. And, oh, my God, I knew it all along. It's just a work. And you're already killing what made it interesting in the first place, which is that, you know, we thought that these people hated each other in real life. And now you're when they're collaborating and bringing it into the real product, it starts feeling like another crappy scripted WWE thing. But the last topic I wanted to mention related to Charlotte is Toni Storm coming out at the end. I thought she actually had a pretty decent showing coming out and challenging her. What do you guys think?
I do too. Yeah, I thought she did. I thought she sounded good. I thought she, you know, there wasn't a lot there. I think she just was out there to kind of challenge Charlotte, and you know, but she seemed credible enough in doing it. I, you know, that's one of those matches like Charlotte Flair versus Toni Storm. Like, you look at that and what, you know, you thought that match would mean maybe even like 6 months ago when you're like, hey, when Toni Storm and Charlotte Flair get in the ring together, man, that's going to be special. And it might be a special match. It might be a really good match. But just the framing of it, though, is, I think, significantly downgraded for what kind of it could have been. And I think Charlotte Flair is going to kind of just roll through Toni Storm. Not that that's the right call, but, And maybe, you know, they give Toni Storm a chance to show what she can do. And obviously, you know, when she has the time and she gets, you know, an opportunity, I think she'll run with it. But, Mike, yes, she sounded good tonight, but I don't know if this is an elevation of Toni Storm.
Well, if you ask Charlotte Flair, it's definitely an elevation of Toni Storm. She was, after all, in the same ring as Charlotte Flair. But, yeah, we mentioned it earlier. I think it was brief. She looked good. She sounded good. And then the segment ended, and it was over like that. So it was refreshing, and hopefully I'd like to see more of her. We need somebody. They need people that are going to add more depth to the division that it doesn't have now. That's the recurring theme tonight. And as for Charlotte and Becky, obviously I can't claim to know have any insider info about what heat they may or may not have backstage or against one another. But I feel like as a rule of thumb in pro wrestling, always assume that whatever you're seeing is a work and go from there to determine otherwise. Because once, especially with a company like WWE and then a company like Sports Illustrated and that William mentioned Becky did the interview with, the more I hear somebody in WWE say, basically, like in summation, no, it's not a work, it's a shoot, then I think, yeah, it's a work then. Therefore, it's a work, you know. And yeah. And Zach, the last thing I want to do is be out here looking like a mark in the pro wrestling business. So I feel like that's the safest stance to take until you have like some real concrete evidence to the contrary.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. Great point, William. Thanks very much, man. Appreciate the call.
Thank you for taking my call. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Have a good weekend. All right, we got to get this thing off. We've went really long. We'll put a bow on it there. Thanks to all the callers. Really appreciate it. Great topic. Sorry we couldn't get to everybody tonight. Mike, thanks so much for joining the show, man. Always great to talk a little wrestling with you. Take a minute here and plug away for all that you do for The Torch and your social media as well.
Yeah, sure. If anybody wants to find me on Twitter, you can. It is at The Mike Show 42. I'll see you on there. For PWTorch.com, I write a weekly article covering WWE's main event program. That's two matches from Raw's undercard. Some weeks it's good, some weeks it's not as good, and I'll tell you which it is every week. I also write a report for every WWE kickoff show that leads up to every pay-per-view event. So my next kickoff report will be for WWE Survivor Series in a little over a week, I guess. So yeah, Zach, good to talk with you again. Thanks for having me on. It's been fun.
Absolutely. It has been fun. And make sure you guys check out Mike's main event, TV reports. There, you know, main event, it gets the rep that it gets. But there, you know, your reports tell you, and you, I mean, the world and listeners, about the hidden gems. And there are some hidden gems on that show. There's times where I'm reading a report and going, all right, you know what? I'm going to flip on main event here and watch this Ricochet match or something. Every so often, there's something there, Mike.
Absolutely. And sometimes, yeah, you mentioned Ricochet, and he had a match a while ago, and they let him go like 12 minutes, which bucks the trend of main event matches. First one's 5 minutes, second one is 7 minutes. But they sometimes go off the rails, and it's really cool, and it's all in the reports.
Yeah, yeah, yep. Keep it locked there, pwtorch.com. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn. You can go VIP and check out my weekly audio show on the Canvas. It's a show that details the art of wrestling. We take a current event from the world of wrestling, and we just hone in on that and look at it from an artistic perspective. So we're kind of leaving a lot of the types of topics that we talk about on this show at the door and just honing in on like the art and performance of that segment. This week on the show, we did a on the Canvas full gear preview where we just previewed the show, the AEW show that's tomorrow night, and looked at it match by match and broke down the art of the build to each of those matches. So fun show to do. You know, we're 166 episodes in now, so a lot to check out as VIP members. pwtorch.com/goVIP. You can check out my show. You can check out Wade a little bit later with the Wade Keller Hotline, running down his thoughts on SmackDown, and also I'm sure an in-person perspective on the AEW show tonight as well, since he's out there covering that. pwtorch.com/goVIP, and keep it locked at the website, pwtorch.com, all weekend long for full gear coverage. I'll have a full gear editorial up there at some point tomorrow that previews the event, and yeah, we'll have all the news and updates that you need. pwtorch.com. So make sure it's part of your cadence for the weekend to keep you up to speed on all things AEW full gear. Follow me on Twitter at ZHeydornTorch. That's at ZHeydornTorch. Thanks once again for listening. For Mike, I'm Zach, and we will catch you next time.